Well, having a guest is always a ride.
The best kind of ride.
It's true.
I feel like the three of us are like, I don't know, like teenagers out in like mom's car. Maybe one of us doesn't have a license. That's how it feels right now.
Just learning how to use it, how to drive Shift.
Welcome to Fate of Mates, everyone. We're gonna do it right up front this time. We're gonna be professional, Jen.
Of course.
I'm Sarah McLean. I write romance novels and I read romance novels.
I'm Jen Prokop. I'm a romance critic and a shit talker on Twitter.
That is very true. That Jen is gets us in trouble a lot more than she used to. And that amazing voice that you hear is our guest this week, Tasha Harrison. Tasha, welcome. Welcome to Fate of Mates.
Thank you for having me. Finally, after we went like all over God's green earth on the internet to try and make this connection.
And in mom's car.
Yes. Well, that's 100% my fault because the internet, I think I said this on last week's episode, but like the internet here in Brooklyn is insane now because everyone is self-isolating. The whole city is on lockdown. And so everyone is using the internet, including a million public school students. So it's great here. So if I drop out, Jen and Tasha will just soldier on without me.
Just keep chatting. You'll be like what's her name, Michelle from Destiny's Child, when she fell off the stage with Beyonce. And Kelly just kept dancing. Like, don't pay no attention to that.
Exactly. Well, what else are you going to do?
You're going to have to clamber back on that stage by yourself is what we're trying to say, Sarah.
And pick up the dance right where it dropped off.
Okay, exactly. So, Tasha picked our topic today. It's one that we have talked about briefly before, but is a classic. We could probably talk about it every week. So, Tasha, tell us about our topic and then, like, why you're jamming on it so hard right now.
Enemies to lovers. Well, here's the thing. When I was looking at my notes from the books that I chose, I realized that not a ton of people really do it really well. Like, they're not true enemies to lovers. Like, I like them to, like, loathe each other at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
I think the reason why I'm jamming on it lately is because, like, I feel like so that all of us have so many differences going on. You know what I mean? It's like, I need to read something where people actually hate each other at the beginning, but then can love each other at the end.
Oh, I like that.
Not that I want to love lots of these people on the internet and in the world.
Well, there are lines. There are lines.
Yeah. Like Republicans. What are we doing with them? I don't know.
It's hard. These are dark days. Here's my question, Tasha. So, do you think that we as readers have to hate one of the characters too?
Huh, that's a toughie. I think that we should be able to recognize right off the top that one of the people is legit messy. Like, there has to be a reason why the character is like, you know what, I don't want to mess with you because you might be a trash human. I can't be sure. So, like, there has to be a good person or, like, a kind of a middle-of-the-road person. Person we don't feel any way about, but then like a complete trash heap of a person that really is just trash heap on the outside, but then ends up being like the Fraggle Rock trash heap, you know, that gives wise advice and stuff.
The trash heap has spoken.
Well, that's because I think, like you, I think it can really be hit or miss, right? And I've been thinking about, like, you know, I wrote a whole column about like what makes it work, and one of the things I really stand by is it has to be high heat. Like, a lot of that, all that energy from their hatred has to go somewhere. But I also was thinking, like, if we're really sympathetic to both of them at the beginning, I was thinking a lot about the role of the reader in this, like, little group. Like, when it doesn't work, it's often because I'm like, well, they're just really nice people. Why don't they like each other?
Because they don't like each other. This is something my mom used to say to me all the time when I was a kid. She's like, everybody ain't your friend, you know? Just because they seem cool to other people and they're other people's friends, you might not vibe with them. And there is a reason for that. Because, you know, ultimately, probably there's something wrong with that person and y'all just don't connect. And whenever you try to force it, it goes wrong. It never happens like that in romances. But Number one, you giving the reader a job, Jen. I mean, like, as an author, I can't say I'm going to give the reader a job.
The moments where you sort of throw two characters together and force them to, like, interact with each other and they just cannot stand each other are the moments where the book really races, like, the pages turn. There's so much chemistry in those, you know, hate moments. And the sort of... that sort of old adage of, like, the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is something, is apathy. More like indifference. Because hate just has so much of that, like, sexual tension when it's handled really well.
Hard agree.
But I think so, too. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, these books, really good enemies to lovers. Because, like Tasha, sometimes they just don't work out for me. And I think, like, the things that I... when they don't, it's often like the pacing's too slow because this has to snap, right? And or I find I'm like, well, these are just two nice people. So why are they, why don't they like each other? I don't know.
Yeah, why are they being assholes?
I have to see
each other.
The animosity, right? Because otherwise they're just assholes. And
yeah, I think there needs to be a real reason why they dislike each other. Like, even if they're two nice people, there has to be a real reason in the middle why they don't like each other or why they're forcing the distance between them. Like, it can't just be like, oh, there was some big misunderstanding. Now we're going to rape our faces. Like,
yeah. Interestingly, when I was looking at the books that I was trying to pick today, I was thinking a lot about enemies to lovers. And in my head, the way I categorize enemies to lovers and all the, like, subgenres of enemies to lovers, like, revenge books are different and, like, childhood friends to enemies to lovers are different. And, like, it's a hard... what's interesting is, like, because romance serves, you know, all the kinks at once, you sort of have these, I was like, well, revenge books don't count, but of course they do count. So I guess, what are we looking for as readers when you said at the beginning, Tasha, like, writers who really do it well, what is the magic? What's the secret sauce?
Okay. So for me, the secret sauce is definitely, like, it has to be something that is going on with one of the characters that is unchangeable. Like, the thing that's keeping them apart is not something they can just be like, huh, and toss out and be like, now we can be together. Like, it still needs to remain an issue. And I think the only way it really works for me, because I'm looking at these now, is like, oh my God, there's all, like, these heavy issues that's in the middle, like grief or infertility or, you know what I'm saying? Like, something that cannot be changed.
I would agree with that. I think that's because otherwise it does. You're kind of like, why can't they just be flexible? Well, whatever this thing is that's driving them, it's hard to be flexible about, right? Or I think it's like, if it's a misunderstanding, it's so deep rooted in, like, kind of the way they see the world, as opposed to just them being like jerks about it.
I think that's pretty much the only thing that works for me. It's like, it has to be something real.
I think there has to be a lot of chemistry. I'm going to tell you, like, there is talk of there being such a thing as, like, a slow burn enemies to lovers. And I'm like, that's a unicorn. That's like a six-fingered man. I don't think that really exists.
You know, Jen, you have a lot of hiccups.
I know. I do. I'm like, sorry.
You're just like, no, I don't like that. No.
I think it's true, but I think it's, and maybe it's just because it's a tightrope anyway. And now it's a tightrope you've raised up to, like, a couple hundred feet. So I just think maybe, like, the degree of difficulty is so much harder that then when you fall, it's, like, so much more apparent that I'm like, oh, that didn't quite work for me. Right. Like, so part of me too is like, man, I don't know what it takes to really, it's like an added degree of difficulty if you're going to try and also make it a slow burn, because the deliciousness of enemies to lovers for me is all about the chemistry.
I think that's all about tension, though.
Yeah.
The only way it works if it's a slow burn enemies to lovers is, like, if you're still, the characters individually are still feeling all that tension and just not acting on it. Like, that kind of slow burn works for me, but not kind of like, oh, I hate you for 15 chapters, and then we just kind of slam our bodies together. That doesn't work.
I've talked about this book 1,000 times on the podcast, and Jen actually earlier today was like, you can't talk about it, so I'm not going to talk about it. But Rachel Higginson's The Opposite of You, which is the chef romance that I love so much, which is a slow burn, works as an enemies to lovers because they're rival chefs, right? Or they're not really rivals, but, like, they're chefs who are at each other's throats. He's sending her, like, notes on her food all the time. Like, he's a real ass. asshole.
He's a jerk.
And finally,
right?
Yeah. And when it comes to pass that, like, she finally goes and eats in his restaurant under duress because she cannot stand this guy, she discovers that, like, his entire menu is inspired by her. And, like, you have this moment where you're like, oh my God, he's been into her forever.
Yeah. Like, why were you such a dick?
Yeah. I know, but I love it so much. And it's so problematic, like, because it all goes back to that sort of thing we tell girls when they're growing up, that, like, oh, if a boy's mean to you, it means he really likes you, which is, like, so packed with, like, patriarchy and misogyny and, like, problematic relationship stuff.
But it works
stuff.
the way that book, it works well because...
It scratches an itch.
Yeah. Because he's, like, it's not that he's... I don't think he's, like, pulling her hair or anything like that. He just doesn't know how to communicate properly is what it is. It's like, oh, I'm really impressed with this thing you made, but instead of just telling you that, let me criticize.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you it needs more salt.
Exactly.
Or also that he really sees that she can be better than she is. He just doesn't know how to communicate that. But it really works for so long because we think he's just a real jerk like her. And you know what I mean? Like, I do. I think that's like there's always an exception that proves the rule. I mean, I'm totally fine with saying that, right? Like, that's a perfect example of when it does work. I do think, though, it's a real tightrope. I think it's really hard. Yeah. Tasha, let's start by actually maybe like talking about, as we talk about our books today, like what part of the enemies to lovers thing really works for us. Cause I think maybe it's different things for different books. Like, each one's an exemplar, not just an example.
Okay. So I chose Grubby Jake by Melissa Blue. It's enemies to lovers, but also kind of like a forbidden romance. So, and like, it starts off where she's just kind of like, he's like one of those dirty dick motherfuckers that you really don't want to mess around with because he's got such a bad reputation. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, you have dicked down half of the staff here. I don't care how fine you are. I don't want to deal with you. So, and then having his kid in her class kind of adds like an extra tension. You know what I mean? That makes sense. Right. So even when they start messing around, that tension is still there. It doesn't change. And his situation doesn't change. Like, the reason why he's such, you know, a dirty dick mofo, it hasn't changed. Like, he has a reason behind that. So it doesn't, all those issues still remain at the center, and it makes their, like, you know, the dark moment, like a real dark moment.
So I will admit, I really like Melissa's books a lot. I have not read this one because I am a teacher, but the very idea of like hooking up with a parent is like, whoa. So I haven't read it.
That does not feel inappropriate at all. It's not like he's a student. I mean, yeah. I'm here for that too, but
it's so true.
Yes, me too. Me too, Sarah. Me too.
If it's on the right side of the Simone scale,
I'll tell you what, I might get over it.
Like, please do not tell people to stop writing those. Stop doing that, Jen.
I'm not telling anybody to stop writing anything.
Tasha, I will always be the voice of reason on that.
So tell us a little more about, like, without spoiling it,
which is
how
hard.
Do you think, right, I know. Sometimes we kind of assume people have read along, like, with us.
I hope.
What do you think, how does she get over, like, once she finds out that he, like, kind of what the underlying issue is? Like, do you think that's really a key part, without maybe talking about, is that a key part of getting past it? Like, you finally see the other person's point of view.
You have to see their humanity.
Yeah. Her discovering the reason why he was the way he was. Like, she didn't ask him about it. She actually was kind of creepy about it. She internet stalked him. Ooh. So she found out.
Oh boy.
How, like, because there was no mom involved, there's this kid, he doesn't, and all the other teachers that he messed around with, it was like, he won't even introduce me to his kid. And they're like, I'm a teacher, I deal with kids all the time. Like, why don't you want me to deal with your kid? And she's like, there's got to be something else behind it. So then she, you know, she Googles him and she finds out what it is. And all of a sudden she's a softy.
That's interesting.
She doesn't really, she doesn't really explore the fact that, I think it's just kind of assumed. It's like, oh, this is why he doesn't, you know, have any relationships, yeah, because he just doesn't feel safe.
Right.
Welcoming people in this situation. So it's not like he was just being trash because he was trash.
I like that because sometimes I feel like people do not take the basic step in a book of just like Googling. And often I'm like, why?
It's like Google doesn't exist in contemporary romances. It's like an unwritten rule.
Well, I think you know what it is. I think a lot of people are still laboring under the assumption that, like, if you're writing contemporary romance, you can't write it in a way that's going to date it. And we're like, this is such a...
Oh.
The internet is like, I mean, when you go to school for creative writing or any type of, like, literary fiction, they're always telling you that shit. It's like heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Don't date your work by talking about Facebook or Instagram. Like, bro, it's our everyday
life. Yeah.
Like, there's no way we can exclude it now. It's been, what, like 15 years that we've been on all these apps and in our phones, and it just doesn't make any sense that a character would not be like, oh, I met this guy at a coffee shop. Let me Google his name. I'm going to do my Googles.
Yeah. It's also not like Googling isn't going to be a thing. Like, we're not always going to know. Even if Google dies, like, internet search is always going to be called Google, right? It's like Kleenex or Xeroxes.
Yes.
I mean, when you read old contemporary romances, they're dated as fuck. The idea that you could avoid dating your contemporary romance if you just don't mention
technology. That's why I stopped worrying about it. I was like, this is a dumb rule, and I'm not going to pay attention.
I mean, there are great contemporary romances from the late 80s and early 90s that I still reread, and they're like, kind of nonsense now because they, you know, name check celebrities who are in their 60s and 70s now. It's like hot. But the reality is like, okay, fine. Robert Redford was a snack.
Even in the 90s, he was old in the 90s though.
All right, maybe it wasn't Robert Redford, but there's a Judith McNaught that I really love, and it's like Kevin Costner is at the wedding. And like
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner.
You know, I always felt like he was so bland, so I would have been like,
I know, but, you know, I think he had a People's Sexiest Man Alive time.
I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah.
He is the generic kind of white man that they do love to
I would have walked past him in the grocery store.
Same. He has, like, Chris Evans' face for me, but, you know.
Ooh, see? Oh, you getting spicy now. You can't do that.
Now it's your turn to take it from Tasha. Fine, I'll be the good girl.
I'm sorry, Tasha.
No, I don't like any of these Chrises. I think they all look the same to me. Like, I just call them the Chrises and the Ryans. I don't know.
I like that that Australian one. He's pretty hot.
Thor,
but... When he takes his shirt off, I like the way he looks underneath.
Thor, Chris,
I don't care about his face.
I mean, but I have Chris Evans' blindness. Like, I can't see him. Unless he has a beard.
And now that I know he's from, like, Massachusetts, like, I like to hear him be himself. Like, I like him in interviews. Because he's got, like, this... me and my friend Katie were talking about this. It's like, he's got, like, this underlying dirtiness to him. Like, he seems, like, so wholesome and bland on the outside.
He's like a boy from Southie,
Yes, and then he starts talking. I'm like, like that one interview. I'm going to drop that GIF.
Yeah,
you guys drop a link because there's one that I go back and look at all the time where he's talking about when he was interviewing for Knives Out, and he's interviewing with that one black reporter, and she has on these white boots, and he's like, "Look at those boots."
Oh,
and then like at the end, he was like, you know, like he makes like a really harmless flirty joke, like, I was gonna wear those but I decided not to, and good thing, huh? And then he just sips his coffee and licks his lips and looks her up and down in this way. I was like, hold on, sir, what are you doing?
I don't think I've seen this.
Did that cure your Chris Evans blindness, or
no, I just like him in that GIF.
Just for like a moment, like there was like a glimmer of
It's kind of like the Robert Pattinson thing. Like he's only hot in that Dior video.
Just that one elevator.
It's like, let's stop pretending like he's hot, you guys. Dior just knows how to film him. Okay.
Yes. Okay, but wait, this is the perfect segue for me to talk about one of my books because there's elevator banging in it.
Oh, so awesome. There you go. See, look what we did.
Silky segue.
I knew it would come around again. I was like, I don't hate everything. I love when people bang in an elevator. Loving it up when I'm going down. So, a book I actually think is sort of the platonic ideal, actually, of enemies to lovers for me is Beautiful Bastard by Christina Loren. And I say this because the main characters are Chloe Marks and Bennett Ryan. And she's like working for him. She's basically like an MBA candidate. She's worked at his company forever, and he's like getting her to help him with some big project. And he is a jerk. Like, I actually have had friends be like, I tried to read that book you recommended me, and he's terrible. And I was like, yes, that's the whole point. It's enemies to lovers. You got to hate this guy. And they bang it out all over the office. I mean, over desks, in hallways, in, I mean, and they just.
Wait, and isn't she an intern in that book? Yeah. So, like, it's okay. You can't date your student's parent. You can date your, you can bang it out all over the office when you're intern.
I've never worked at an office. I mean, this.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, I don't know. Sure. Why not?
As everyone knows, like, I'm fine with all of it, but I'm just trying to figure out where Jen's line is.
No, I think Jen's line is personal. It's just personal. Like, yeah, I can't read NA because, like, I have a kid that's 22. Absolutely yeah. not.
No, it's
gross.
Personal.
Oh, no, that's not okay.
I would never shame anyone for loving any book with, like, the teacher-student grumpy Jake. You do it. It's just for me. You're like, yeah, that's my job. It's weird. In an office, I've never in my life worked in a cubicle, like, ever. I don't know what that's like.
I mean, that sounds like hell, actually.
It does.
For Beautiful Bastards, like, I mean, what is it? Was it? Is it Beautiful Bastard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to be 100% honest. I never read that book because it felt like it was kind of one of those reiterations of 50 Shades.
Here's why I don't think it is. She is a stronger character.
Yes.
If it is at all, it's them. And I couldn't speak for them. They'd be like, well, this is garbage. She would not be putting up with this bullshit. Right. And in fact, one of my other favorite reasons I love this book is at the end, when she finally like gets sick of his bullshit, she leaves that motherfucker in cold storage for 8 weeks.
Yep. Ooh. It's really deliciously earned.
Yes. Where she, like, fucking takes her phone offline and doesn't answer calls.
He has to, like that one woman that walked in. It's like a Twitter meme that she's like, oh, I walked in on my boyfriend cheating on me. And I brought him, like, breakfast and a video game for his game system. And I just left that shit there, walked out, deleted him from my phone.
Told all my friends not to talk to him, not to tell him what happened to me.
Told my parents, like, listen, this is what's going on. Moved out of the city. I'm like, listen, a hero.
This is what I like, because she's really like, you cannot fuck up my job. Like, we can have this hate sex all over, but do not make me look unprofessional. And the reason she finally like gives him like the kick to the curb is she overhears him talking to like sort of another guy, you know, from another company in a way that is like real dismissive of her. And I think he even refers to her as like a kid, and she is like, fuck you. And that's, I think, the reason it works for me, is even though it does have that, like, we're in the corporate office, she is not, like, a pushover. Like, what's her name? I can't remember.
Anna.
Yeah.
Anastasia.
I'm watching a lot of Frozen over here, you guys.
you poor woman.
That's it for me, too. In Enemies to Lovers, I need them to be... I need, like, Clash of the Titans. I don't want one to be a weakling. I want them to be really, like...
Yeah. Well, I do think that that's the hallmark of a Christina Lauren book. Like, there's... the heroines are never weaklings, and that's what sets those books apart from a lot of the rest. It sort of separates them from a lot of the rest of the group that tend to be writing around Christina and Lauren.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think Beautiful Bastard is real hot. Like, I think did come. I mean, Tasha's not wrong. It came sort of all. It all kind of burst at the same time. You know, it was the first of those like trade paperback, sexy contemporaries, office set, kind of riding the heels of that like rise of sexy contemporary, but like out of mass market, out of ebook, like, you know, published by a non-romance publisher.
Oh, I thought they were self-pub. That's crazy.
No, they were published by Gallery, which is not a romance publisher.
Huh.
Here's the other thing. I want to talk about the elevator scene, though, before you continue, because it's fucking funny as hell. They're in an elevator, and they start making out, and she's like, what about the cameras? And this motherfucker reaches up and puts a Post-it on the ceiling over, like, the camera lens. And I was like, I admire your ingenuity.
Yes. That was very smart.
He was prepared.
And considerate. Yes.
He was prepared. He's like, I've got this file folder here.
I've got some post-its in my suit jacket. I can just...
I've got you. I was planning to bone you in the elevator.
Like, I liked it. I liked that sense that he was like, we're going to bone in the elevator, but no one else is going to see but us.
I mean, but that could be funny as well, though, too. I don't know. In a romance novel, not in real life.
Sure, of course. You know, it's interesting because I do think work is a natural location for enemies to lovers. Like, rivalry becomes, mm-hmm. is such a, like, great way of setting up two characters who are both strong-willed, both incredibly competent. You know, everybody knows that we've talked before that, like, competence porn is my whole thing. And when you have two characters who are, like, equally competent and sort of balanced in that way, it sets up a very different kind of enemies to lovers relationship, which is what is happening in, well, actually, it's what's happening in Mia Sosa's The Worst Best Man, which is one of my two picks today, which I'm going to talk about together, because I also picked Sarah Mayberry's The Best Worst Mistake, which is a very similar title and also a sort of similar setup, because both of these books begin with a character being jilted at the altar.
Oh, wow.
And in
now, I feel like jilted at the altar, like, I still haven't read one that I'm like, okay.
Well, but this is not, neither of these are reconciliation books.
Okay,
neither
good.
These are second all chance right. books. No.
Oh, yeah, those men are dead to us for sure.
No, that's yeah. it. Fuck those guys. Cold storage forever. Jilted at the, unless there's some great reason, like, you know, they're a vampire and suddenly eternally, you know, in fire.
The wedding was during the day. I couldn't make it.
Exactly. Like, I don't know.
Whatever it is, there has to be a great reason.
I can't think of one either.
Anyway, so but Mia's book, the heroine is a wedding planner and she is jilted. She's at the altar and, like, left. And, you know, it's horrible, right? It's horrible on what Mia does so well. She layers, you know, it's just good writing, period. But she layers in, like, all the horrors. Like, this is extra horrible and extra embarrassing for a wedding planner to be jilted at the altar, right? And so she's like, fine, I have to just, like, put that behind me and move forward. And she gets this opportunity to work for a big hotel chain as, like, the kind of planner on staff for them. And it turns out that she ends up having to collaborate, like, having to work alongside for, like, some big project. The best man from the wedding that she was jilted at.
It's also the dude's brother, right? Isn't it the dude's brother?
Oh, no.
Who's also the ex-fiance's brother.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
See, now I'm all like, give it a chance, Tasha. Don't say no to things. Don't be that way.
Because I feel like I would have rage quit the whole family. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and she, of course, thinks that the brother has, like, been involved in getting, like, essentially, she's like, your brother jilted me at the altar. Clearly, you were involved in this. Fuck you. I hate you.
Exactly.
But she needs this guy to succeed at this, like, new life that she's trying to put together for herself after having had, like, this massive life trauma, like, emotional trauma. And I actually, interestingly, when I was thinking about it today, I'm reading, Tasha, your new book right now.
I might be dying.
And thinking about, and I've been thinking so much. First of all, I wish we had had you on when we were talking about Women Who Work, because I feel like
it's so good for this. Yeah,
it's such a good. And also, Jen and I just talked, and we're putting it. But whatever. I don't want to spend too much time thinking. Wait, but the title is, remember, I'm terrible at titles. Let's do this right. What is the name of the book?
A Taste of Her Own Medicine.
A Taste of Her Own Medicine. So anyway, the reason why I was thinking about this in light of my pick, Mia's book, is that, like, you do this really... So the heroine of your book has this... has been through a divorce. She was a stay-at-home mom, or she took care of business. And now she's trying to figure out how to reimagine her life now that her marriage has ended and she has a teenage daughter. And she's trying to just, like, get hold of herself and, like, figure out her future and, like, carve a path for herself that is separate from the life that she had before in some ways. And like, who among us hasn't had that experience? And I feel like what Mia does in this book is she says this, she's basically created this character who's doing a similar thing where like she had this terrible past thing that it was horribly embarrassing, impacted her career, impacted her life, changed the way she thought about herself. And now suddenly here's this guy who is like the embodiment of that memory returned, and she needs him to succeed in this new life, you know, away from the past. Y'all. And it is real fucking nuanced.
Yes.
It's a lot of layers. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's like a triple yikes.
Yeah. And it's, but it's great because they can't stand each other. She, of course, is like, get the hell away from me. We're only talking if we have to talk. Like, we're never interacting. And then, of course, like, they fall in love. And then in the reverse, there's my kind of like primordial text for enemies to lovers is Sarah Mayberry's Her Best Worst Mistake, which we've talked, we sort of danced around on the podcast before. But it's a similar setup where the hero of that book was jilted at the altar by his bride, who happens to be the heroine's best friend. Yes. And in this case, we know for a fact the heroine was like, you should not marry this guy. This guy is not right for you.
Yeah.
And she didn't like him. She never thought he was good enough for her friend. She thought he was too crusty and too grumpy. Ooh. And like, not, this is like grumpy hero, kind of sunshiny heroine match too, for those of you who are always looking for that. And she basically was like, you're not good enough for my friend. You shouldn't marry her. Like, she shouldn't marry you. I don't like you. You're the worst.
But you're good for me.
Yeah.
Well, wait. And then he comes to her house. It begins and he comes to her house and he's pissed, and rightly so. And he's like, you shouldn't get to have decided that I'm not right for her. Like, how do you even know? And they have this knockdown drag out. And then, like, it turns into absolute pure, like,
hate fuck,
fiery sexual tension, and then a hate fuck. And then it just destroys them both. Like, they just can't figure out, they can't get their heads on straight anymore. And it's great.
I do feel like the best enemies to lovers have to have, like, that first one has to be a hate fuck, where, like, in this one, they literally, he just, like, gets up and leaves. Or no, she goes to the bathroom and hides and is like, I hope he fucking leaves. I mean,
she's like, I've made a huge mistake.
Because I like it when they don't even realize. They're like, oh, shit, what did I just do? And we are like, yes, that's what I want.
You're ruined forever.
I'm invested in these books now. I hope you know that you're about to make me, like, break my moratorium on buying books.
There, I mean, that Sarah Mayberry has been free recently. It might still be free.
Nice.
Yeah. Tasha, you have one other one for sure that you want to talk about. Is that right, too?
I do, but now I feel like you guys have really good ones, and mine are kind of just like...
No, that's
they're
not...
all really
they're
good
all
ones.
They're all really good.
Yeah, I mean, they're all really good, but they all... The ones that I chose are not really great enemies to lovers. Maybe I'm really a punk when it comes to it. Okay.
You know what? I think you're really onto something, though. I think each one of these is, like, doing something different, right?
Yes. So, agreed.
Like, when you're talking about Grumpy Jake, like, I keep thinking about it. You know, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to try and get past this teacher thing, because the whole idea that the real cause of the problem is something that, like, that person can't talk about.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when we talk about, like, being strong and having two people kind of be like gladiators kind of going at each other. Like, I think that I'm really interested in figuring out, like, well, what's the X factor? And it sounds like that's why you have to, like, talk about a lot of them. So you go ahead and you tell us what other one you have on your list.
I have next Everything's Better with Lisa by Lucy Eaton. And full disclosure, this is like a trope sink. Like, there's lots of, like, she just threw every trope in there, but it starts off, like, in the first act is mostly enemies to lovers. Like, he's her drunken neighbor and shows up in the middle of the night. And like,
I love it. I love it too. Put it in my veins.
They live in brownstones in Brooklyn, and he stumbles up to the wrong brownstone and he's trying to jam his key in there. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, I'm trying to get in my house. She's like, this is not your house.
Tasha, I love it when she thinks that he's trifling. Like, that is the best.
Yes, it's like, this trifling dude, he's dragging up here at 2 a.m. on a weekday.
On a weekday?
It's like, it's on a school night, y'all. Drunk. Can't figure out. So drunk, he can't figure out which door is his. So, and that's where it starts off. And so, like, there's this separation because she has this idea of him, like, being, like, this drunken frat boy.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, some Wall Street guy. Like, he works in business. It's, like, this guy who goes to bars in his suit and, like, hooks up with people and then comes home and rings my doorbell or tries to get into my apartment every night.
And you know why that's so powerful? Because I do think, especially now, we talk a lot about, like, at the end of the romance, they have to have their HEA, but you also have to really believe that they, like, can trust in each other. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, the like that very premise that, like, you're going to get a heroine who needs, like, security and stability and, like, a good man.
Yeah.
That if he starts out low like that...
It's like, how is he going to recover?
How is he going to recover? And I think that actually to me is a really powerful, I'm into that for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, that's how it starts off. And it's kind of like, they end up being neighbors. There's a secret baby, like, but the baby's not his. You know what I mean? It's like, he just acquires a baby, which is kind of my favorite, my favorite way for secret baby to happen. Like, oh, somebody died. Wait, this is, I have to take care of this. I mean, parents have no idea how to do that. They, like, give you the baby when you're leaving the hospital. It's like, okay, so how do I not kill it?
Yeah.
And so I kind of like that dichotomy. And then her being there and just kind of, like, knowing that he needs help, but still believing that he's a trash human. But maybe the baby doesn't deserve to be dragged through that. And that's how they end up coming together. Like, because they live so close, you can hear the baby screaming at night.
So does she have to, like, help him figure that shit out?
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Like, literally teaching him how to be a parent. Like
Like, to be a human who does not...
A responsible...
Like, yeah. That doesn't leave a baby, like, sitting on the steps sort of thing. You know, like, I was just running in to get something. Here's this baby.
I don't love babies in romance, I see their purpose,
yes,
right? And sometimes their purpose is just, like... Here is the ultimate responsibility, right? So if you're going to show someone being completely irresponsible at the beginning, it is a way to show total competence at the end if they can take care of a child.
Yes, like it's it. Like it's this line of demarcation. Like, you absolutely have to grow up. And I think, like, I'm not keen on babies in romance either. Like, I would prefer, like, 5 and 6 year olds, I'm cool with, but, like, babies, they seem like huge cockblocks. I mean, well, all kids are cockblockers.
Babies, especially.
When was the last time you hung out with a 6 year old? Do you want one?
No.
Did you guys see that tweet yesterday where a guy said, people keep saying that there's going to be a baby boom in 9 months and they're all going to be first children?
Yeah.
Yes.
Honest to God, I'm like, everyone, do not do this. Use, like, contraception. Listen, what is wrong with you?
I just had an argument with my son about buying the wrong poop bags. This is where we are.
I saw that on your Twitter.
He's like,
oh my God,
these are the wrong bags. No, first he asked me, where are the poop bags? I was like, they're in the drawer where we always put the poop bags. He's like, no, where are the blue ones? I'm like, this is an argument for real? Like, this is where we're at?
Like, you're like,
and he's 18. So it's like, no.
Yeah.
There's no way I could have an elementary school age kid. But back to that, I don't really care for babies and romance, but if they're handled well, I'm fine with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't like it when the baby intrudes on the romance too much.
Right.
It's like, that's real life. We know kids get in the way of, you know, romance in real life. We don't want that in the book. That's unnecessary.
I think it's really hard because the baby can, like, take up all the oxygen in the romance, and it's really, you have to really focus on the two people becoming a couple, the adults becoming a romantic partnership and not the three people becoming a family in order for it to, like, keep that romance part. And I want them to be a family, but I don't want that to be, like, the story. I know that makes me sound real fucking ruthless.
Well, because it's kind of like, I'm just hooking up with you because I'm here for the baby. Like, you need help with the baby, so I'm just going to take care of the baby. And maybe I'll slide you some dick because you're here too. You know what I mean? It's like the worst scenarios, like people who get married because they got pregnant type scenario.
Yeah, well, there's, yes. I will say, so there's that Kylie Scott. So Kylie Scott did her first series, or I don't know if it was her first series, but she did the Rockstar series. And then the Rockstar series sort of like spun off into a bar series. And the first book of that second series, which I don't remember the title of, we'll put in show notes. It begins with the heroine, like 9 months pregnant, like kind of coming into the bar. And like, she's like about to pop. And I remember reading it and being like, what the fuck is about to happen in this book? Because she has no relationship. This is not like, the baby is not his. Like, she does not, this, she is just a, like a woman who is pregnant. And he ends up giving her a room like above the bar. Like, basically he like rents her an apartment or a room above the bar. And she has the baby. And he like helps her take care of a literal infant, like and I'm like, what is happening? And I will say this, like, I really, like, if that is a thing, listen, you guys, if that is a thing that you are, that you think you might be into, this is a really great book. But it was a lot for me having a 2-year-old or whatever when I read it, being like, what?
I mean, well, you lost me at a pregnant lady comes in the bar, because I'm like, yeah. What the fuck?
That's yeah, but if that situations. Is your thing, like if your thing is like men who step up and like want to help yeah. caretake, like this book will scratch every itch you have.
I just think here's like a little like a rule of thumb. If you are an author and you're writing a book about a baby, or like a woman who has an infant, and you talk about her boobs as like nursing more than sexy, then I think the like ratio is wrong. Like, that's when it doesn't work for me. I don't want to talk about nursing in a like romance ever. And I know that seems bad, but I don't. Like, I was like, this isn't sexy. What? Like,
because it changes into something else. Like, the boobs yeah. are not... They're not for you anymore.
Right. That's right. And you know what? Of course, that's like their real intended purpose. And I understand that. But like in a romance, like it's often this like sort of shorthand I have for like, okay, there's this baby. But like it's like a shorthand that the baby story is getting more time than the like development of the romance story. I've had a few go wrong that way. That's been like always always like the little hint.
Just like, oh, why are we talking about her nursing being sexy? Ooh.
But you know what? I do. This is sort of a separate thing, but I do feel like and I know, Jen, you and I have talked about this before, but like, I feel like there's a lot to mine about why babies in romances exist.
Yeah.
And like, we should do an interstitial about babies at some point.
Why does it exist? I don't... Patriarchy. Hello. Why do marriages exist in romance?
Yeah.
It's internalized patriarchy. Like, we have to, like, we still haven't gotten past that point where we're like, oh, happily ever after involves some sort of nuclear family.
Right. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
But I think there's also some like, you're absolutely right. It's all patriarchy.
It's all patriarchy.
But like babies as the plot point of a book is also like, there's something in there that's packed in about like what certain types of readers are looking for and like what womanhood looks like to so many people. And mm-hmm. like, it's really, it's one of those topics that I feel like, we sort of skirt around so much because neither Jen nor I like kids in romance novels.
But yeah, I feel like I'm like, you're going to need a special guest to talk about
there's
that.
There's a lot
maybe.
To mine there.
Yeah.
I also think it's, we talk a lot about, I know we're like far afield from enemies to lovers, but this is super interesting. So we're just going to continue
just
down
roll
this
with
path.
It.
Yeah. I think one of the other things that sort of happens is I never want my romance in my brain, every romance I've ever read, the romantic pairings are still alive and doing well. So I never want them to get really old, but I think like a baby is sort of a like, it's far enough into the future that you as readers are like, oh, they're still around, they're still happy, it's a few years in the future, whatever. And you can signal that without having to make them, you know, at death's door. And so I think part of the other thing is like, what is it telling the reader is like, they've made it through some hard shit together. See, because everybody who's had kids knows it's hard shit. Yeah. So I think that's the other thing. You're really
but marriage is period too. Like, I think I think a lot of times the way the marriages and relationships like are handled in romances is very with kid gloves. Like, nobody ever has any real problems. And like right now, I'm kind of one of the tropes that I've been really obsessed with is like marriage in trouble. Like,
yes,
how people navigate that, because when you've been married to somebody for 15 years, like you have to make a decision. It's like, am I going to stay with your ass for the rest of my life? Because I don't know if I like you right now. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
funny because people are saying there'll be a big baby boom. I predict in romance, we're going to see a bunch of marriage and trouble stories.
Yes. Because all of this close contact, like,
Yeah.
It's one thing for you to want your husband to be home after work. It's something else for him to be home all day.
Yeah.
And you learn so much more about each other during that that time where you're like, I don't know. Is this what we signed up for? I mean, and also it is a totally different, like, this is such a weird experience, like living truly in like total close quarters. Like, no one goes out. Nobody has time. You know, nobody goes out for a drink with their friends.
I'm waiting for this to be like a happily ever after the pandemic thing, so I can't write a story about it, but I can't write one now because, like, like, how is it a happily ever after if you are still trapped in your house?
Do you guys remember, I mean, obviously, we all remember the TV show The Wire. And
My dad was a character in that.
Wait, really?
He was?
The
pause.
The last two seasons. Okay, so my dad, he works in politics. He lives in Baltimore. The year that Martin O'Malley was running for mayor, my dad was working for a newspaper called the Afro-American. It was like the last black newspaper in Baltimore. And he was writing some really scathing, you know, articles about this guy because it was the first white mayor to campaign in a very long time in the city, you know? So, like, he was writing all these really scathing articles about him. And then Martin just shows up at his newspaper and was like, I want you to come and be my press secretary. He was like, nah, I'm good. But then he kind of like courted him for a while and they ended up being friends. Like, it's like a total bromance. But fast forward, like the year, I think he was already mayor. And because the guy who wrote The Wire, I can't remember his name now.
David Simon.
Yes. He also was involved in Homicide: Life on the Street, which is also filmed in Baltimore. So everybody knows him. You know, all the newspaper guys know him. So he just picks up the phone. He's like, hey, so we're going to do a season on, you know, Martin's election and all that. And I want to send a guy to you so that he can, talking to my dad, I want to send a guy to you so he can, like, shadow you and, like, see what you do and pick up your mannerisms and stuff. And my dad was like, fuck no, I don't want to be on this show. And what's crazy, he didn't tell us any of this. Me and my husband are watching this season, and we look and we're like, hold up. He was like, hold up, is that supposed to be your dad? I was like, oh my God. I was like, he walks like him, like he has this rhythm of speech and everything.
Wow. That's really amazing. Cool.
It was crazy. He doesn't like me to talk about that, but he doesn't listen to podcasts, so it doesn't matter. He'll never know. But yeah, like, I can't remember what the name of the character was on the show, but he was like, he was the white mayor's right-hand man, the black guy, older black guy.
Okay, we'll dig it up and put it in show notes. Yeah. That's really cool.
I'm kind of glad to hear you, Tasha, say that your dad and Martin O'Malley got along, and Martin O'Malley ultimately became a cool dude, because I remember when he ran for president.
No, he's a super cool guy.
And I was like, oh, I like this guy.
Like, I didn't like him when he was running for president because he was so shiny. And I kept telling my dad, I was like, are you talking to Martin? I said, who's handling him now? It's like, he looks like a salesman. I don't like it. Because, like, Martin O'Malley is like a true to life down in the basement of a Catholic church on New Year's Eve drinking whiskey with a priest type of guy. Like, he is just like a true Irishman, you know.
And he probably would have rated better.
If he had been more authentic the way that he is, he probably would have rated better. I mean, I like him as a person. I didn't really care for his politics when he was mayor.
Yeah, mayor.
It was problematic, but, you know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's all about local government now, though, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. My brother works in local government, and, you know, I live in Chicago. The difference between having Lori Lightfoot as our mayor versus having Rahm Emanuel, I mean, we have J.B. Pritzker now in Illinois as our governor, and he, you know, we all walk around right now saying, like, what if we had Bruce Rauner? Right. Like, if we had a Republican governor right now, we would be in such worse shape. And so that's the part that's really hard.
I also think it makes a big difference. I think it makes a big difference if your local Your local representatives, yeah, like your representatives, like government on a local level, it makes more sense if they are more focused on the actual place that they're governing versus having like aspirations towards the White House. Like if they, like if their only reason to be in government is to get to DC, then they're never going to work for you. That's Democrat or Republican.
I mean, it feels like living in New York City or Baltimore or, you know, any number of places like or Chicago, the mayor of a city is just not the same. A great mayor does not make a great president. Those are two very different skill sets.
Yes.
You know, you need a mayor to be super hands on.
But she was going to say something about The Wire, though.
I was. You know what? Here's what I was going to say. This is really terrible. I don't know if you guys remember this. This is why this is relevant. It's not, but like back when they would like sell drugs on the street and how they like had a different name for it every day. Like it was like, right?
It was come get your red taps, get that blue fire.
In one episode, it's pandemic. Yes. And they'd be like, pandemic. And we, for 20 however many years, my husband and I will like shout at each other like, pandemic. Like it's funny.
And that's that.
They ruined it.
They've ruined it.
Science ruined it.
We can just do the Cardi B. Coronavirus. I will call my sister. Ever since we've been in isolation, I'll just call her and shout that and hang up.
Oh, yeah. I did it. I did it to my son the other day, and he was like, oh, my God. Coronavirus.
My sister. So my dad was Italian, and my sister and I, for the last 3 days, have just been calling each other and repeating in the original Italian one line from that Italian mayor shouting at people video, which is...
That was gold. It's oh, my perfect. God. It was
the so translation
good.
Is... I said to him... You are not Will Smith. This is not.
But I am legend.
I am legend.
Wait, do it in Italian, Sarah.
Non sei Will Smith. Questo non è io sono leggenda.
It sounds way less aggressive.
Literally. Yelling this at each other for 3 days.
I love the one Italian mayor that was like, why are you going to the hairdresser?
Oh yes. Yeah.
It's like the woman. You know what's gonna see you. You're gonna be in your coffin.
Yes.
Oh, your coffin's gonna be closed anyway.
Did you see the woman who did the same, who the female mayor? There's a second video.
Oh, I haven't
seen
it.
We'll put all these links in. You guys, these are joyous, delightful links that will give you big laughs. But so it begins with her saying, stop taking your dogs out for walks. These dogs are exhausted. Right? And then she's like, and the thing that makes me crazy is all you people going to get your hair cut and waxed. You'll be perfectly waxed and everything will be perfect, but you'll be dead.
Yeah. Well, as someone who put off a haircut, I was like, oh, it'll be spring break, I'll get my hair cut. And now I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to have that scraggly-looking hair. It's not a good look.
Well, mine was right after they had shut the city down, and I was like, well, shit. And it was the night before, so I thought, she's going to cancel it. I don't have to cancel. And then I get a notification that she took my $40 anyway. I was like, you know what? You can have it. You can have it. You know what? It wasn't a big deal. I was like, you know what? You can have it, because you're probably having a whole lot of cancellations. But also, you could have sent me a text.
Yeah, right.
I mean, while we're at it, I just PSA to everybody, if you have a hairdresser or like a person who does your nails or somebody you see regularly.
Pay them.
Yeah. Right. Either pay
That's why I was going to do it anyway is the thing. It's just I didn't like having the decision taken from me.
Exactly. Yes, well. And a lot of these organizations are doing GoFundMes for their stylists or they're doing gift cards that you can buy now and use later. Same with restaurants, same with, you know, think about the small businesses that are in your ecosystem and think about how you can support them even without seeing them. It's hard.
Yes.
Pandemic, everybody.
Coronavirus!
Including independent bookstores.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I know. Well, that was a digression.
Also, I'm going, just taking it back to Enemies to Lovers. If you love Enemies to Lovers and you haven't read Cressley Cole's Immortals After Dark series, boy, do you have a pandemic ride ahead of you.
Yeah.
Start there. There are 20 books. You're going to be so happy.
I want to wrap up by, if we can, because I know we're getting to time. I did really want to shout out a book by Julie James, which I really liked, called, wait, I have to look up the title because, you know, I don't ever remember them, called The Thing About Love. Sorry.
We're so bad at this.
I know. They're the worst. They're rival FBI agents, and they essentially meet up at Quantico, and they fucking hate each other. And it's 6 years later, and they get put on a case together, and they have to pretend essentially to be a married couple. And what I really like about it is that, remember we were talking back to Grumpy Jake about how you have to get the other person's point of view?
Yeah.
What Julie James does in this book, and it's really masterful, is she goes back to 6 years earlier at Quantico and has these like paired scenes where we get like some shit went down and we see it from one person's point of view and then the other person's point of view. So we, the readers, know what's happening with them. And then we get to watch these two kind of figure it out together. And I think it's a really smart twist on enemies to lovers, where we're then like the audience, like rooting for these two to like just see past their dumb things they believe about each other. And so it's like, I think there's a lot of really clever ways that people get around that that sense that they're like, there's no way they can ever possibly see each other's point of view. And I just thought it was like a really clever take on it. So I just wanted to shout that out before we wrapped up.
Cool.
Julie is so unsung, I feel like. She's so undersung, I should say. Like, she's so good. That FBI series is really solid. Like,
yeah,
every book, they're all focused on, like, a group of Chicago FBI agents and district attorneys. And, like, she's a lawyer, so it all feels very authentic. And I really love her work.
Yeah, it's a good one. Tasha, we are going to actually... tell us about your latest book, but please know that Sarah and I are already plotting a episode for later.
Can we also talk about the fact that Tasha's currently, like, the next book that's coming out is a food book?
Oh, yes.
It's a chef book, and I can't wait.
It's a chef competition, and it's not enemies to lovers. It's a second chance romance, and there's a quote-unquote secret baby. If you're reading the first book, you get the baby's not secret. You know the baby's not. It's just secret to him. He don't know about it. A Taste of Our Own Medicine was a book that just fell into my brain. I was going through, I don't know, I have so many ideas, and sometimes you just can't get them to come out the way you want to, right? So I had just finished up The Truth Duet, which was, like, a lot of heavy topics, police brutality and, like, addiction and family, interpersonal relationships. Like, it was just a lot. It was, like, 110,000 words of the two books together of heavy shit. And I just wanted to write something light, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. What I mean? Like, I always write kind of like core issue books. Like, there's always kind of like a core issue, but they were happy around it. And I was like, I need to figure out a way to give my brain some rest from this stuff. And, you know, 3 months went by, 4 months went by, 6 months. I'm like, well, okay, so I guess I can't write anything anymore. I'm a hack. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's not true, everybody. It's a great book.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And then I went to Chicago with my husband for my birthday, and I was complaining to him the whole time because we were doing all this book stuff. And I was like, when I got back home, I was like, maybe I should just do a challenge. Like, maybe I should just challenge myself to write a whole bunch of words in a short amount of time, like NaNoWriMo, but not as long, and see what happens. So I jumped on Twitter. I was like, hey, I'm going to write 20K in 5 days. Y'all want to do it with me? And then I shut my phone down and didn't come back until later on that day, because I was just assuming, I'm putting this out there because I need accountability, but there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the world right now. Maybe nobody's going to see it. Lies. When I came back, everybody's like, how are you doing? What you doing? I was like, listen, I don't know. This is me shouting it out right now. So I ended up writing the first half of that book during that. And now, like, it's the challenge itself has become something that I'm really in love with. But yeah, so that book, I'd never really written a heroine that was the same age as me. And I kind of have an aversion to the cougar thing. You know what I mean? It's like, Older woman, younger man. Nah, it's not my favorite because I
but
have
she
sons.
Had an aversion to it too, and yeah. I think that's kind of why it
that's
works.
That's why it
right?
works.
Yeah,
she's like, "What are we doing?"
I'm like, bro, you are a child. He's like, "No, I'm a man." She's like, "But you're not." Yes, you are in that way, yeah. but in this way, you're 10 yeah. years younger than me, and like it was a big deal to her, and it would have been to anyone, especially yeah. if you're, you know, you've been married all these years.
I love the moment where she's like, "You're 9 years younger than me," and he's like, "Well." 10 really. And I'm like, what?
He's like, doing
no,
the math.
You read it wrong.
Because he really doesn't care. He's like, and yeah. what? And she's like, so a whole decade. That's great. Thanks.
Yeah, that made me feel much better.
I'm out. You fine and all, but bye.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense that, like, I had to get. I think in writing it, I had to get around it in my own head to like, how could I make this situation if I was this person work for me? And I guess I came across well. But also, Atlas was just dreamy.
Oh, yeah. Listen, you guys, I'm not even going to listen. I'm all like, listen.
Listen.
When they're in the barbershop and everyone's like, what does she look like? Mm-hmm. And he describes her like us. Goddamn. I was like, as Sarah would say, my pants flew off my body.
Like, I'm sorry. Was I wearing underwear? They incinerated.
Oh,
and everybody,
he describes her like a song. He's
yeah. It's like a familiar song, but I don't know the words, but I want to remember it. Like that kind of thing. God.
So good.
It's really, really romantic.
I love that barbershop scene because like I've been in barbershops with my kids and like people are like, it's such a weird space to be in as a woman. So I like the idea of the barbers being women.
Yeah.
So they're kind of policing it a little bit. Like, we're not going to have that objectification going in here. Like, right. we're not going to talk about this woman and her body yeah. parts. Like, all of them are ready to launch into it. Like, well, tell me about ass. No, sir. Not here. No. Not here.
Right. And then there's, like, the old man who yes. is, yeah. like, he's talking about his future wife. I mean, like, it is.
Yeah.
When Sarah said it was romantic, I'm actually going to say, I was like, this is romance right here.
It's so romantic.
Aww.
Yes.
And I mean, but aside from being so romantic, like I said this earlier, but I love every business is owned by a woman. And right yeah. now I'm just like, I think I've said this before in the podcast, but like I fired all the men who like were service providers over the last year, just because I was like, I need more women in my life, like only women. And so I was really happy about that. I want to live in this town.
Well, I mean, I modeled it after a part of town in this town. Unfortunately, okay. there's not a lot of women business owners. There's quite a few.
Yeah.
But also yeah. I blacked it up a whole lot. Like there's a handful of black businesses over there, but they're older businesses like Kinfolks, like Mr. Kemp's restaurant. So they're kind of like teetering on the brink of not being able to hang around for a while. Like it's definitely a neighborhood in transition. And the people who are building businesses down there, they're definitely like scrappy elder millennials, like trying to hold on to the integrity of the neighborhood. But yeah. you know, these two lifestyles clashing together is like, the thing.
Yeah. So go out right now, everybody, and find that business in your neighborhood and figure out how to support it through this.
Yeah.
That's what we got to do.
Yeah. Oh, Tasha, if you have a couple of businesses in it's Greenville, right? Are we
yes.
allowed to say that?
Okay. Yes, okay. You can say that. I mean, they can come and get me if they want to. I got guns.
If you have any small businesses in Greenville that you really love and you want us and like you think are shipping or whatever, why don't you let us know and we'll put them in show notes.
What else did you want to know about that book? Like, I kind of love that book.
No, you did a great. We're going to talk about it.
You should know that it's really filthy and I didn't.
Oh, fuck. Can I ask you a real question? Since I have you. The Subaru. The scene in the Subaru. I was like, sometimes when I'm reading, I'm always like, was this like a test? Where you're like, think of the least sexy thing and make it sexy. And someone's like, Subaru. And Tasha Harrison's like, done.
Big facts. I actually right? hate Subaru Outbacks. Everyone around here has them. Like, it's like this. There's this weird dichotomy in this town. It's like either you have a BMW because there's a BMW factory here. Or you drive like this super crunchy Subaru. And like, it's like the mom wagon around here. I hate seeing them. And then I was like, well, what kind of car would she drive? She would be practical. And I was like, I was thinking about the neighborhood that she's living in. I was like, oh my God, everybody over there has Subarus. I'm just going to give her a Subaru.
Yeah.
And like, all I could think of the whole time I was writing that, I was like, I'm smelling graham crackers. And I was like, but she doesn't have any little kids. Like, you know how, like, your car smells like kid? Like, kind of like old milk and graham crackers. And I was like, this is not hot. This is not hot.
You made it hot. It's no joke.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to wrap up just because I realized I got some things I have to clean out in the backyard, apparently. Tasha, thank you so much for joining us to talk about a lot of things and enemies to lovers.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Come on again.
I will. Invite me back for something else. I don't care.
All right. Cool. So where can we find you? Where can listeners find you?
I am at Tasha L. Harrison on Instagram and Twitter. I hang out on Twitter most of the time, but follow at your own risk because whatever. and my website is TashaLHarrison.com. I'm also on Facebook, but don't bother trying to reach me there.
Yeah, I mean, same. You guys, this is Faded Mates for the week. We are back next week with Susan Elizabeth Phillips' Nobody's Baby But Mine, which currently is free on Kindle Unlimited. If you are a Kindle Unlimited survivor,
yes.
If you are a Kindle Unlimited subscriber, it is free there. You can leave us a voicemail message and tell us about a book that blooded you this season at 646-450-3766. And you can find t-shirts, buttons, and other gear on our website, fadedmates.net. Just click on merch in the drop-down menu, and you will find links to everything there.
Hey, y'all. My name's Beth Hawk, and I'm from Texas. The book that blooded me is by Philippa Carr, also known as Victoria Holt, in her Daughters of England series, and it was The Lion Triumphant. And how this book, you know, kind of brought me into the romance and how it changed my life was that I stumbled upon it when I was in junior high in a used bookstore, and it was a tough time for me, and I had no idea this was a series. I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about romance. And it was the first one I read, which is actually the second in the series. And I also just by chance had gotten the fourth one. So unbeknownst to me, the series was about the daughters in a line or a family tree, if you will. And what was so interesting about this series was not only the romance aspects, and she really dove into some, you know, kind of non-traditional kind of, you know, tropes there, but also you got to see the family dynamics and the after effects of the love story of each couple throughout the generations, and how and where each of them drew their strengths from. You kind of got to see the grandmother and the granddaughter interacting and the different, you know, kind of nuances that, you know, maybe the grandmother loved about the, you know, the hero, but maybe was a little bit tough for, you know, later generations. So it was just really fascinating. Because it wasn't just about the love, you know, between, you know, a man and a woman, but it was also about family. And that was so compelling. So anyways, thanks, y'all. We love your podcast. Keep it up. And please, if you could consider doing an episode on Victoria Holt, a.k.a. Philippa Carr. She's amazing. And so are y'all. Thanks.